We are live on Blog Talk Radio for another great edition of Sports Club. I'm your host, Jeremy the Impact York. Joining me this week out of hibernation, I promise you they have been quite busy. He is the coach, Haywood Hill. How you doing, coach?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, and also fresh off his East Coast tour. I believe he's got some shirts made in case anybody wants them. He is Superman Cody Elias. How you doing, Cody?
Jeremy, great to be back. The East Coast was a great trip. All-Star game was a success, so I'm happy to be home and get this going.
Definitely so. And, you know, let's start right there, because there's a couple baseball things we were going to mention. As Cody just said, he did go to the All-Star game out in the Washington, D.C. area. So real quick, tell everybody about how all that went and how close you came to getting Bryce Harper on this show.
Well, it was a great experience there in D.C. It was I only made it to the All-Star game. We got to D.C. kind of late, so I didn't get to do the Home Run Derby. But the All-Star game itself was a fantastic experience. We got to do the red carpet event, which was cool, seeing all the players getting introduced. Right before the game actually started, it actually started a thunderstorm, and I was actually like thinking, are they going to delay this game? Because if they postpone it, I had plans to go sightseeing on Wednesday, Smithsonian, all the monuments, you know, the whole D.C. area, the White House was going to try to get in. That didn't work out, but that's a story for another day. But it ended up stopped raining after about an hour. They played the game. Nationals Park was great, a great atmosphere for that. I came to within about 5,000 feet of Bryce Harper because there's so many people around him. But, you know, it was close. I kind of sent him the message like, hey, want to come join the show, but, you know, kind of busy. So hopefully next year in Cleveland when I'm there and Bryce is playing for probably another team, we might be able to get him on the show.
My guess initially was Chicago at the beginning of this year. But, Coach, do you have any guess where Bryce Harper could be next year?
It is up in the air. It's going to be quite interesting to see how that turns out. I have no idea as of yet.
You know, at this point, we can't even eliminate Atlanta from this because it wouldn't surprise me if this front office made a move like that. It just seems highly unlikely.
To me, he would be great in Atlanta, but you don't want to risk that future. If you're going to spend the money on him in free agency, you might as well. But I like what the Braves are doing with their future. I mean, Nick Markakis is an all-star for the first time, and he's 34 years old. So you can never say never, but I'm kind of with you with Chicago. Chicago would be an interesting fit. I mean, with him and Chris Bryant being such good friends and being from the Vegas area. Harper's dog's name is Wrigley, which is interesting. I could see that happening. But I'd love to see him stay in D.C. where he started his career because he said years ago they'd love to stay with one team his whole career. But the Nationals are kind of falling apart, and they might be sellers. So if I'm Mike Rizzo, the GM of the Nationals, I would put Harper out on the block and see what you can get for him. Don't trade him if you don't get what you want. But, I mean, I at least look into it because you might be losing him. So, you know, it doesn't hurt to try.
Right. You know, a lot of teams are probably going to hold out, you know, kind of the way the Lakers did with LeBron, just hold out and say, why would we risk anything? But, yeah, somebody could trade for him as a rental. He would be a great addition if you're trying to make the playoffs. But, you know, we go from talking about one baseball superstar to the unfortunate season being done for another. Now, this could be a way Washington tries to make up for losing Bryce Harper next year, but because he will be ready at that point. But Tim Tebow is having surgery on his hand. He is officially done, which means we're not going to get to see Tim called up to the awful Mets, my awful Mets. We're not going to see him called up this year, but you know, wish Tim the best. And Tim, if you're out there listening, come be on the show. Do either of you guys think this is going to have a big impact on what could be the rest of his baseball career, or do you think he just goes back into football?
Well, you know,
I don't think it's going to.
Go ahead, Coach.
I'm sorry. I don't think that it's going to have a huge impact. I think with baseball, it's a little bit different. For football, it probably could play a role in something like that. But with baseball, you know, you have a chance to play. It's a sport in which you can have a lot of longevity in. But it depends on the severity of the injury. I mean, if it's something slight and he can get over, you know, relatively quickly, I don't think it has an impact. But it depends on the severity of the injury. I don't know the in-depths of the injury as of yet.
I think he'll stick with baseball because he was actually having a nice year for the Mets Double A team, and they're probably going to call him up because, well, they're the Mets and they're struggling this year. I mean, you got Noah Syndergaard coming down with hand, foot, and mouth disease. I mean, everything's going wrong for the Mets. Cespedes is going to be out for over a year probably with the calcification or the callus problem with his heels. The Mets could totally use him out in the outfield, not even to sell tickets, just to see what the guy has because there's so much hype surrounding him, kind of like when he played in college in, you know, Florida. I mean, I don't think it might not be as high, but having him play at Citi Field in New York and, you know, them being the second team, it could generate a little bit of buzz even though they're about 20 games under 500 and all the stuff that's going on. They have a three-man power group running that team right now with Omar Minaya and J.P. Ricciardi and Rico, their assistant GM, with Sandy Alderson being out. I could definitely see them calling him up if he didn't get injured, but, you know, unfortunately now he's out. I don't think his baseball career is over. I think he's going to stick it out because I think he really wants to do it. But approaching 30 years old, you know, he's going to get something done if he's going to keep playing in the minors. I don't want him being the next Michael Jordan where he just flames out of, you know, playing in minor league baseball. But I think he sticks it out and he doesn't go back to football.
Yeah, I don't want him – as much as I'm a fan of the guy, I'm going to – and this is such a loose thing to compare, but I don't want him to be like Brock Lesnar and do five or six different things to where we never really know how good he could have been because he doesn't stick with it long enough. So I agree that more than likely he's going to stick with baseball and still do his SEC stuff on the side when the fall comes around. I just really wish him the best because, I mean, we all know he's a good guy. For some reason he gets this weird reputation about the circus around him, and it's nothing that has to do with him. So Tim, get better soon, and who knows? The Mets could call him up anyway because he couldn't be any worse than what they're putting out there.
The Mets are the Mets, and I heard someone say that they are equivalent to the Cleveland Browns of Major League Baseball. I think that's a bit severe because the Mets were in the World Series a few years ago. But this feels like a move that a team like Cleveland would make. I mean, you hear the rumors that they might sign Dez Bryant. I'm not comparing. Yep. I'm nowhere near comparing Dez Bryant to Tim Tebow because they're – off-the-field resumes are completely different and their makeup's different, but I guess it would have been a great move for the fans and just to create buzz, but it sucks for the Mets because, you know, they're a franchise I root for as a kid that grew up in a small market town like Pittsburgh, and for them being as bad as over 20 years, and you have the mutts, as they used to be called, and then, you know, they make the World Series a couple years ago. It would have been great for that team because they're kind of in a rebuild phase, and for this to happen, like I said, it's unfortunate.
Yep. It definitely is. But we're going to move on to a few more. I promise you guys, I see the next blowing up. We see it. We will get to NFL in a second. I want to get some of this other stuff out of the way, and we'll get on with it. And I promise I will put soccer at the end so that Coach and Cody don't have to worry so much about it. I think that takes care of every text I've seen in the last 10 minutes. But I was going to make reference to the Hawks signing center Alex Lynn to a 2-year, $8.5 million deal. I have no idea who in the world Alex Lynn is. I felt like maybe, Cody, you might, but they went and one-upped me, and before I could kind of halfway poke fun at them for that being the biggest news, they signed Vince Carter last night. Now, I'm a big fan of Vince Carter. He's a big highlight reel. They already have Jeremy Lynn, so it's very clear they want to stick with their young nucleus that they've built through the draft and trades and such like that, and they want to bring in these two guys to help, you know, sell tickets. But I think this Vince Carter signing is actually a really good thing for the Hawks. Coach, I'll throw it to you first. Do you think this signing is really good? And if so, short-term, long-term, at what point could this maybe flake out?
Well, I think it's a great short-term investment. They have to have some type of marquee name that can sell tickets. And I think that Vince Carter will be able to do that. For the long term, I don't think it is something that's in their future plans because, again, they've gone very aggressive in the draft. They have a young team. They got rid of a lot of guys this past season and mid-season with trade. So I think right now it's just more so to bring fans back into Phillips Arena and just kind of give them a marquee name at this point.
Cody, what do you think?
Speaking of Alex Lynn, I know who Alex Lynn is. He played at Maryland. He came out as a sophomore, if not as a true freshman. Played for Phoenix. He was a nice center for them. He's young. He could do nice things with Travis. You know, Travis Schlenk, I know him from being the former assistant GM of the Warriors. And I think that he would fit in well in Atlanta now that, you know, they kind of moved on from some of their other pieces. You know, trading Dennis Schroeder was kind of a head scratch to me, but I knew that the organization probably didn't really like him that much just from the way he was acting. But bringing in Vince Carter, I think that's a great move for a young team that's rebuilding, and you have a player like Trae Young, which is so funny because Trae Young and Vince Carter's and Trae Young's dad and Vince Carter were born the same year, and when Vince Carter debuted in the NBA, I don't even think Trae Young was born. So I think it'll be good for Atlanta to have a player like Vince Carter there to help build that team, because you have some nice young players that, you know, Travis is trying to build with. You know, they have a new coach there from the Lloyd Pierce, who came over from the 76ers staff. So I like to see what they're doing. I think the Hawks will be good in a few years. Travis is really rebuilding that team with draft picks, and he's doing it the right way. And as a fan of tanking, I think that they're doing it the right way, and bringing in a veteran player like Vince Carter could help that team. They're not going to win this year. I mean, they might win, you know, 20, and it's, you know, in the 20s in games this year, maybe up to 30. But, you know, in a couple of years it'll pay off, because he gives that veteran leadership to some young players like Trae Young and other guys. So I like the move. This is probably Vince's last year. We were hoping Vince would sign out here in the Bay Area with Golden State, because he's never won a title, to finish his career for the team to draft him, because no one really might not remember. Vince Carter was actually initially drafted by the Warriors and traded for Antoine Jameson on draft day. So we're hoping he comes here, but I'm glad he ends up with the Hawks, and hopefully he can do some nice things to help that young team grow.
Yeah, absolutely. And if he went to the Warriors, that would probably officially do it. I would already check out for next season, because there would be no point in watching at that point. Nothing personal. The Jeremy Lin signing did kind of pique my interest a little bit. I do like the young pieces, the Trae Youngs, the stuff like that. I liked a lot of the pieces they were building. I have a lot of respect for Holman and a lot of those other guys that we've either had on the show or just I've ran across over the time. So I was already going to check out a game, but you tell me I get a chance to see Vince Carter. Yeah, the basketball fan back when he started in me is going to have to check that out. So I do like what Travis is doing. Speaking of GMs who are probably vastly underpaid and not quite understood, I don't remember his name, but the guy up in Toronto, he just landed Kawhi Leonard, and all it cost him was DeMar DeRozan, who is going to be middle of the pack in the West. He's probably not even going to make, you know, probably not even going to make All-Star game. And DeMar DeRozan's a good player, but it's a bad contract. They just got out from under. Kawhi Leonard is now in Toronto, where either they can ship him to the Clippers or the Lakers at the highest price, make them have a bidding war, or if they convince Kawhi that being Canadian is not all that bad, they're only another piece or so away from being the 2 or 3 seed in the East. Coach, what do you think about the Kawhi Leonard trade?
You hit it right on the head that they're going to possibly use him for Trae Bay. There was a lot going on with him that he finally got out of his situation that he wanted to. I think the organization is happy. I think he's happy. I don't think he's happy where he is right now going to Toronto. But again, you know, it's still early, and I think he'll make the best of it. But again, you know, he's one of those kind of commodities that can kind of float around for the next year or two. And I think that Toronto might even make a play for him. They might just want to see what they can get. But if not, at least he settles in Toronto for at least 2 years.
Cody, what do you think?
You know, there's a lot of stuff going on with Masai Ujiri, the GM of the Raptors, talking about how they feel that they did DeMar DeRozan wrong when they traded him to San Antonio for Kawhi. I'm just glad the Kawhi thing is over, because I think that the Spurs deserved a lot better. Because Popovich has been there for over 20 years, and he's never once had a problem like this. All of his players like playing for him. And then this is the whole thing happens with Kawhi Leonard, where he plays for a championship culture down in San Antonio, then he wants out all of a sudden. The whole injury thing, it just drug on all year long, and him not coming out saying what the injury was just – it was a bad look for him, and now him being in Toronto, I mean, I hope he turns his career around. I was never really a big DeMar DeRozan guy. I mean, I thought him and right. Kyle Lowry were a nice backcourt, but now that it's going to be, you know, Kyle Lowry and Kawhi Leonard, I think that's going to be a nice tandem. But the East is kind of weak. I mean, you got Boston and you have Philadelphia, trust the process there. And those are really the front runners, because Cleveland giving Kevin Love all that money was a head scratcher in itself. But I think Toronto will be there. They're not going to. Yeah, and I thought if Cleveland's going to make the right move, they should have traded Kevin Love, because
Yes.
The waste his career there again. It's going to be just like Minnesota when he was with the Timberwolves, or he had no talent. But I'm hoping Kawhi turns his image around, because that's kind of what it is. He needs to rebuild that image, and we'll see what happens. But the East is going to be, I think, a two-man, you know, two-team race between the Celtics and Sixers, and maybe the Raptors are there. I mean, they did win 60 games last year, but they did fire their coach, who's now in Detroit. So we'll see what they do. But I'm hoping he rebuilds his image, because I actually like Kawhi as a player.
Yeah, and I've heard I see people on the text line saying Washington. No. Washington's in the 4 or 5 spot. I mean, but at this point, you know, maybe the Hawks luck up and win 40 games or so, which could be topping out for the roster they have. But if they win 40, 45 games, there's a chance they sneak into the 7 or 8. So, I mean, Hawks fans, there's something to look forward to besides just the big-name signings.
I think people that are talking about the Wizards getting in the playoffs, that's just because they signed Dwight Howard, and he had that whole speech about playing 8 years with the Wizards and all that BS that he did. I think Travis made the right move with Atlanta getting rid of Dwight, even though he's from the area. I think that was a good move, getting rid of him. And Jeremy Lin will be a nice player for them if he can stay healthy. He got hurt last year, was off for the season, but he had a nice start to the year. And Brooklyn loved him, so I'm hoping that works out. I'd love to see the Hawks get in there as like a 7 or 8 seed. I don't think it's going to happen this year, but the East is so weak that – hell, they could win 35 games and make the playoffs because that
right.
conference is so weak.
Right. There's a handful of teams. I mean, there's Brooklyn, who are still going to be bad. We don't know what Cleveland's going to be. The teams that LeBron used to beat up on 4 or 5 times a year, I mean, those same teams are still in the East, and some of them got worse and not better. So, I mean, like I said, Hawks fans, I don't think we're going to be in the lottery ball section this year for the draft, except for the picks we've accumulated. So Hawks fans are something to look forward to. There's always something to look forward to. Go check out the new arena. My goodness, are they making a mess on the outside of it. So it's going to – the whole new renovated Phillips Arena is going to be great. But let's see. Where do we want to go? You know, let me – all right. I'm going to tell a quick story. It's going to get us into where basically this is going to go from here. Long story short, for everybody who's new to the show, kind of a new thing I'm trying to kind of bring in and bring back. It's everybody gather around the carpet. It's story time with the Impact. Some days I say it a lot more appealing than that. But over the weekend, I took one of my favorite little family members. Of course, that would be my cat, Sunshine. I had to take her to get a rabies shot. The vet we took her to is a little over an hour away, and whenever she gets stressed, she starts to flip out, she sheds hair everywhere, that kind of thing. But there's this whole big buildup. The entire hour-long ride there, she's flipping out, she's just, like I said, there's just hair everywhere, she's kind of hyperventilating to a point, and then we get to the actual vet's place. And the way this works is you go fill out a clipboard, you pay up front, because this was discount day, that's part of why I went. But you fill this stuff out, and then I go back to the car, and by then, she's completely calm. In fact, she's still calm to this day. Ever since then, she has not gotten any more worked up than that. In fact, during the shot process, during getting her inside with the vet, she had no problem with any of that stuff. Basically, long story short, sometimes I think our anticipation on things, sometimes we are guilty of overhyping things or thinking things are going to be really bad when they're not, or really good when they're not. You know, the easy topics real quick off of that, you know, obviously it was Tim Tebow. Everybody thought, a lot of people thought he was going to just be the greatest thing in the NFL. Turns out, not quite. Everybody thought the Tiger comeback. Oh, Tiger's just going to flip a switch. He's going to come back. Well, we kind of overhyped that. He just is really getting back into shape. A couple years ago, the Eagles got all those guys. They got Asamoah and all those. They spent all this money, and I think anybody that they signed lasted more than 2 years. Yeah, the dream team that they put together. I think it lasted about 2 years, and they blew that up, and then they built the winner they have now. But in sports, especially us in the media, I will throw myself under the bus there too. We're guilty of building up this anticipation that doesn't always deliver. At least we eased into the Vince Carter thing. That is what it is. But see, that brings up, you know, Darrelle Revis just retired. Everybody thought he was going to be able to keep Revis Island going for 10, 12 years. Every year he kept talking about, and I would say for a 3 or 4 year period, Revis Island was not only a real thing, it was more treacherous than the Bermuda Triangle. That's where good receivers and great receivers went to basically die for a game. But towards the end of his career, everybody kept hyping up that Darrell Revis is still spectacular. And you could tell when he lost a step, it was over. Because he's one of those guys, as soon as you come off the line, he likes to be physical. If you can get away from him being physical off the line, you had him beat. Overall, Darrell Revis, good player. But, I mean, Coach, what do you think about Darrell Revis overall? And do you kind of see where I'm going, that maybe we overhyped exactly how good he was beyond that 3 year period?
Well, you know, I mean, that's one of the toughest positions in football to play. And I think that he proved himself. It's no doubt that he proved himself as a football player in the National Football League. But as all good players, eventually over time it goes away. And I think the fact that he'll be able to walk away from this in spite of the injuries that he took and was able to overcome and come back to the game spoke a lot about him. Again, like I said, it's tough. When you're playing DB, they'll love you one day and hate you the next. But overall, as a football player, I think that he had a very stellar career, and he did his job well for as long as he could. And at this point, retiring is smart, because with receivers getting bigger, faster, stronger, at that point now you have to continue to compete and fight for that position to be on the field. I think he's done well with managing his money so that he can just kind of go home and just kind of relish in the things that he's done over those years. I think he had a great career. And when it's time to go home, I think players know when it's time to do that. And I think he's making the best decision for himself and his family at this point.
All right, Cody, what do you think?
I've always been a Darrell Revis fan, even when he played for the Jets. He's a Pittsburgh guy. He played at Alcova High School. He actually destroyed my high school in the section championship game when I was a freshman. And he was playing quarterback for the high school team, and, you know, as well as playing defense. Then he ends up going to Pitt, and you know, he had a nice run there, and then he goes to the NFL with the Jets and Revis Island and all that. I thought he was a shell of himself last year playing for Andy Reid and the Chiefs. There's a couple plays where he just looked bad. There's a couple tackles he didn't make. He carved out a nice career. I think he's a Hall of Famer. I don't know what you think or what Coach thinks. I think he's a Hall of Famer for what he did with the Jets and playing with the Patriots. He was a shutdown corner for so many years, and teams just hated going up against him. But, you know, as he got older, he lost a step, and, you know, it really showed, especially last year. It really showed last year that he really lost a step, and it was unfortunate because he's coming back and he was getting to play again, and he just wasn't the same. And I think he maybe retired 1 year too late, but, I mean, at least he got one more shot to play in the league. Like I said, I think he's a Hall of Famer, and, you know, I think he had a great career. He's one of the best corners I've ever seen play. You know, that goes along with Ty Law, who also is another guy from the same high school. He's a couple years older than Darrell, but it was great to see him play, and I hope that he finds something to do. I'd love to see him in the media. I know a lot of these guys might not turn out to be media guys, but Darrell, I think, would be a good guy that works in the media. Maybe start small somewhere, maybe do Pittsburgh TV or something for the Steelers, something like that. But it was great to see, and you know, I'm glad he got to end his career on his own time.
Or I will bring this up, Mr. Revis. If Revis Island would like to visit the Land of Impact, we are very open to having you on at any time. But, yeah, real quick, Coach, you think Darrell Revis is the Hall of Famer?
Absolutely. I think he's more than deserving of being in the Hall of Fame. I agree with Cody that his time with the Jets proved it as well with the Patriots. He's probably one of the best corners to play. He most definitely would be in my top five as cornerbacks to play. And so, yeah, he's most definitely deserving of that.
Yep, and since we haven't all been on to agree lately.
Oh, it's funny because it's true.
I don't know about you guys, I missed Homer. So, I agree there. He's a Hall of Famer because it's nothing personal to Terrell Davis, but if Terrell Davis can get in based off a limited amount of time, which I have no problem with him being in either, then Darrell Revis, for the limited time that Revis Island was a undesirable destination for receivers, yeah, I think he's in. But we go from one kind of overhyped anticipation kind of being bigger than it was to the next one, and that would be that one James Garofalo has been hanging out with an adult film star, and it's as funny as the whole situation has kind of become to me, or at least comical. I think you guys would agree, Cody, I'll throw it to you first. I think you would agree that the hype and the anticipation that this is so much bigger than it actually is, once we found out that it's, I mean, I don't see that it's that big a deal. It's not affecting him. It's not affecting his attendance to camp. It's affecting his work ethic. I don't have a problem with him hanging out with anybody. For lack of a better person to compare him to, at least he's hanging out with better people than maybe Aaron Hernandez did. So I don't have a problem with Jimmy G doing this.
I'm with you. I don't either. As a 49er fan, and I get to watch this Garoppolo circus every single day working in the media here in the Bay Area, I think that there's a lot of hype surrounding not just Jimmy but the 49ers in general because the way they finished the season. And Kyle Shanahan even talked about it yesterday when they started, you know, training camp, when they did the media, you know, when him and John Lynch spoke together, they're saying how this is a learning experience for Jimmy, like, you know, because he's under a microscope. And Jimmy even said that. He goes, this is completely different for me. I'm under a microscope. It was a good learning experience, like he said, like Kyle Shanahan said. What he does in his own time is his own time. I don't care. I mean,
right.
It's like asking him if he cares what I'm doing in my own time. Everyone has a right to what they want to do. He's not doing anything illegal. He's not hurting anyone. He's not doing anything, not doing anything illegal. He took someone on a date. Who cares? I mean, let's move on. It's a funny story, though, because I remember I was on vacation when it happened, and I saw that it said Jimmy G takes adult film star or porn star, however you want to address it, out on a date. And it's like, oh, this is interesting. And then they're in Beverly Hills at some real nice Greek restaurant. And it's like, oh, like, how come Jimmy, there's a lot of nice restaurants in the Bay Area. I'm surprised you went to L.A., but, you know, I think TMZ caught up with the actress, like Kiara Mia, I think her name is. She's like a 41-year-old adult film star, and they asked her about it. And she's like, I wasn't a football fan before, but, I am now. And she's like, the 49ers are going to win the Super Bowl. And the best tagline she said at the end was, because everything I touch turns to gold. And I was just like, oh God. But it was just funny that she said that because I'm like, I hope nothing extracurricularly happened with her and Jimmy. But if they did, who cares? Because, again, it's his own time. And, they dressed it, and, he's going to go out. We asked Lowe about it, and, Lowe, being playing in the NFL for 16 years, said that he's definitely going to get a lot of crap in the locker room for this, and guys are going to be on him for, sure. Not just, right now, but throughout the season. And the only thing you worry about is hopefully, like, the stuff that extra attention he's getting with all the hype, it doesn't get to his head and it distracts him, because how many times have we seen this happen where guys have got all this hype and, it kind of caught up to him and, kind of distracted them, and they've had a bad year. So I'm hoping that doesn't happen because there's so much hype surrounding this team this year, and they're going to win probably 8 games, maybe 9. They're a 6-10 team last year. The people who think they're going to go to the playoffs and win the Super Bowl this year, that I think we're putting the cart before the horse here, especially for a team that's still really young and growing, that's maybe a year or two away. But, as long as it doesn't distract Jimmy, I'm okay with it.
Right. And, Coach, before I throw it to you, the Rams are going to win that division because the other three teams are all in rebuild mode right now. So the Rams literally can win 11 or 12 games and run through that division. So, it's at least probably 2 years before the 49ers are really in that mix. But I know, Coach, as not only as a former coach, but as an agent, scout, everything that you've done throughout your career, you probably ran into similar situations, just probably not on this high of a scale with it being the big-time quarterback of Jimmy Garoppolo here. But I know you've dealt with that, especially as an agent, probably with a client or a player maybe hanging out with a different type of person than most people normally would, or at the same time maybe somebody they shouldn't in other cases. I mean, what do you think of Jimmy Garoppolo hanging out with, what did you say, Kiara Mia? Is that her name, Cody?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Well, he has joined the ranks of Drake and Gronkowski in New England as finding a different type of fan base. I think the thing that brings the spotlight around this is the fact that he, for so long he was under Tom Brady's shadow, and now he's now head of a team himself. He's that figurehead, and naturally at some point they have to find something. I think one of the interesting things that'll come out of this is, how well he handles the media. If he blows it off as a joke, or if he allows it to get to him and allows the media to play, play this out better than it has to be. So, again, I think the whole thing is all about how he handles it, more so than making a big deal out of it. So as long as it doesn't affect his play, I mean, again, they were out in the public. That there's no scandal behind this. There's no sex tape involved. So, you know, I think at this point, it's just how well, you know, where is his maturity level in handling the media, where in the past he did not have to probably deal with this other than every now and then and getting questions from the media versus now being a starter quarterback and a franchise player with the 49ers where he has to address these things all the time. So it's basically the ball is in his court, and I'm sure he, you know, his agent has sat down with him, his publicist has sat down with him, and they have a very solid way for him to address this with the media. And I don't think this is going to last much longer than probably another week or two, and then it'll just be all news.
Right. Right. Plus, I mean, you guys brought up the not just the attention, but that he's for lack of a better way to put it, he's tapping into a different market. I mean, I believe if the Google search that I just put up, and I made sure to keep it all in words just to avoid the weird snafu that could happen. Just in the state of California, the adult film industry is a $13 billion annual business. So, I mean, he's tapping into a whole different market that could potentially start filling Levi's Stadium, something that they've had trouble with ever since they opened it. I mean, it's a different group of people that may slowly start buying football jerseys.
I mean, all that stuff takes place down in, I believe, Burbank, down in L.A. But, I mean, it's kind of funny if that's a crowd they get to start going to games. Towards the end of the season, the stadium started filling up a little bit. It was, you know, as a 49er fan, it was nice to see, because I'm not personally a fan of Levi's Stadium. I think it's more of like a concert venue. I saw Taylor Swift there a few months ago, and great for concerts, for football games. I mean, I've been to one Niner game. I went to the opening night a couple years ago, Monday Night Football, and they played the Vikings and ended up winning. This is when, I believe, when they had Tom Sula. I can't remember if it was Tom Sula or Chip Kelly, but it was when they're awful either way, but I've been there for a few like of the Pac-12 championship games, which is a great atmosphere. And the national title game is going to be played there this year, which will be exciting. And that'll be a test to see how well that does fare to a real NFL game. I know it's a completely different fan base, but having the national championship game there for college football is going to be great.
Yeah, it definitely is. And oddly enough, that you mentioned that matchup, I believe opening week. Yeah, week one is 49ers against Minnesota, I believe. I think that's in Levi's Stadium to open the year, because I know friend of the show, John Middlecoff, is over the moon excited about that particular thing. And that's going to be a fun one to watch as well.
It's in Minnesota, so it'll be interesting to see how they go on the road for that first game. Yeah, it was at U.S. Bank Stadium, and now they have Kirk Cousins playing quarterback for the Vikings. Man, that team's going to be good this year, I think, with him, if he can, you know, keep it together, which I think he will. A lot of weapons, and that defense is good. That's going to be a very tough first game and test for the young 49ers and Jimmy G and Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, and, you know, speaking of Minnesota, the unfortunate passing of offensive line coach Tony Sperano of heart disease or complications of heart disease. He was only 56. He had chest pains over the weekend, and then He unfortunately left us during the weekend as well. And former Miami coach, and then Miami Dolphins. As far as I know, everybody loved this guy. He was a good guy. Everybody enjoyed him. I know everybody says that when people pass away. But, coach, did you ever get a chance to cross paths with Coach Sperano? And if not, did you know people who had?
No, I did not personally get a chance to cross paths with Coach Sperano, but I know people that knew him well. One thing I liked about him was his energy. He was always a very upbeat coach, very motivated. Again, you know, it's a tragedy anytime you lose a coach, you know, at any given age, but more especially at a young age of 56. My prayers go out to his family and also to Minnesota in losing such a great coach.
Cody, what were your thoughts on Coach Sperano?
Well, I always remember Sperano for a few things. One of them being when he had the Wildcat game against the Patriots, when they completely stunned them, and the Wildcat took over the NFL with Ronnie Brown and Cadillac Williams, and then what he did with the Dolphins. And then he was the Raiders head coach when they fired Dennis Allen. He was the interim head coach, and they ended up finishing 3-13. But They beat Kansas City on Thursday Night Football, and I remember he ended up burying the football, and that was a great symbolic thing. And then, you know, they ended up moving on to Jack Del Rio, and, you know, that happened there. But he ended up he was under Chip Kelly's coaching staff, I believe, when Chip was here, or was Tom Sula. I can't remember which one, but he was with the Niners for a year. I think it was with Chip Kelly. But he's a well-respected coach in the NFL community, and it's a shame to see what happened because he was so young, because my dad's only a year older than Tony was. So it's really sad to see, and Minnesota lost a good coach. So as Coach said, prayers go out to his family and everyone that was involved, and hopefully the Vikings can honor him this season and, you know, maybe win a Super Bowl or even just get to the Super Bowl. So it's really unfortunate to see what happened.
Yeah, it's the unfortunate thing of being into sports the way that we are is you always lose some really good guys and really good ladies as well sometimes. But yeah, thoughts, prayers, condolences, everything to friends and family of Tony Sparano. Even Miami fans said, you know what, that the time he was in charge here, it may not have went as positive as we wanted, but he was still one of the better coaches they've had in the last couple of years up until Adam Gase now. So definitely sad to hear of his passing, but we're going to try to bring up a little bit. We're going to try to give Cowboy fans hope because Randy Gregory has been fully reinstated by the league. What this typically means, as I have explained to my fellow Cowboy Nation, is that he's basically in Josh Gordon territory where he literally can't sneeze the wrong way, or he's probably gone for at least another year, if not longer. But this is the Dallas team that needs any kind of pass rush and help they can get. I think the emergence of some of the guys they've had has been nice, but having Gregory back on the field is definitely going to be a good thing. Coach, do you think Gregory can be enough of an impact to help them get over the hump, or are they still playing for a wild card this year?
No, I think he's going to be a great impact and a great influence on their defensive line. The question is in the time that he's been out, what has he learned? More importantly, what has he changed? And I hope that, you know, this time that he's been able to take out for himself, that he's been able to kind of reevaluate and refocus on his roles and responsibilities as an NFL player. And I'm just wishing him the best of luck this year. Hopefully he doesn't have any mishaps that could actually possibly put him permanently out of the NFL, which I would hate to see happen.
Do you think they can get over the hump, or do you think Dallas is still in the wild card territory?
No, I think they can get over the hump. I think Dallas has a lot of the things that they need right now. I think that, you know, again, with him coming in, his type of dynamic personality, if you will, that's where does it fit inside the locker room at this point? And that's where you're going to have to, you know, they're going to be able to see that pretty quickly once he gets, you know, into the mix of it, how he's probably in a honeymoon period right now. Being that he'll be back in training camp and some things that he has to get reacclimated. But being probably the first four games of the season will begin to tell the truth of where he is and how well he's taking care of himself and what type of impact he's truly going to make. But I think that he most definitely immediately adds value to their defensive line and a pass rush. I do think he can help them get over the hump.
All right, thoughts, Cody?
I'm hoping this is, you know, this is a good redemption story, like with Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon's now back, and, you know, he checked – he's not at training camp to start the year because of what happened. He wants to get more counseling in I'm drawing a blank on the word I'm looking for, but he's going to – I'm hoping Randy Gregory comes back. I mean, he's only played in how many games in the NFL? 14 before he was suspended. He has one career sack,
like,
I believe. I loved him when he played at Nebraska. He was really good at Nebraska. He was dominant. And I don't think he'll add a value to that Dallas defense, and them having Zeke back for a full year too will be great because of what happened last year, that whole thing. I still think that's the Eagles' division to win. I think the Giants are going to be much better this year. I mean, Saquon Barkley might be the best offensive, you know, best rookie this year. I think they're going to be a team that's going to be a little bit better with their new coach, Pat Shurmur. I think Dallas can still get in, but it'll be as a wild card.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of – even – whether I'm biased as a Dallas fan or not in this argument, I still think we have all the pieces. We just have to put them in the right places. I still think we're right on the edge of going at Philadelphia. I think they're going to take a step back this year, but I don't quite think we're ready to go toe to toe with them. I do agree. We're on the edge of that. We're probably going for a wild card more than likely, but, speaking of people who are definitely not on that edge would be the New England Patriots, who this, to me, is one of the biggest red flags you can ever see about a player that they have. They are potentially seeking trade partners for Malcolm Mitchell, who is coming off an injury, but we all thought Malcolm Mitchell would probably be wide receiver one at this point, given how much they like him. You know, Coach, me and you were talking about this before the show a little bit. Usually this is a giant red flag when you see the Patriots suddenly shopping somebody around. What do you think may actually become of this with Malcolm Mitchell and the Patriots?
Well, I do feel it's a red flag. I mean, the Patriots are not very quick to put people on doing, or there's something, their damaged goods involved. And there's something that's going on probably in his medical report that when you look at the longevity of a season and what it takes to endure one, that they feel right now it is probably best to make moves with him now and try to get something salvageable out of maybe a trade than to try to hold on to him and sign him on injury reserve for, you know, halfway through the season. So I don't know exactly what the particulars are, but for the Patriots to begin to do this early speaks volumes to some things that might be out there that they're concerned about.
And then as I turn it over to you, Cody, the way it's typically went in the last, calendar year or so, is there a good chance Malcolm Mitchell is going to be a 49er by the start of the season?
I was hoping that the Niners would actually try to make a play for him, but they have so many receivers too. They have Pierre Garçon, they have Trent Taylor, they have guys, you know, young guys they're looking at that are hopefully coming around. They have Marquise Goodwin, who had a great year last year. He was right off of having 1,000 yards. I think New England's doing this because, well, they don't really – I mean, he was injury-plagued most of last year. He had a decent first year coming out of Georgia when he played for the Patriots in his rookie year in 2016. But they have so many receivers on their team. You figure when they get Julian Edelman back, they'll have him, Chris Hogan, Cordarrelle Patterson, Philip Dorsett, Kenny Britt, and then you have Gronk throwing the ball too still. So there's so many – they always have a plethora of wide receivers, and I think that this he's become expendable because of the injuries last year and them signing – Cordell Patterson, like I said, and, you know, hopefully they can get something out of Philip Dorsett, who was a former first-round pick who they traded last year for, Jacoby Brissett. So you're hoping that you can get something out of those guys, and maybe if you move Malcolm Mitchell for a draft pick, because Belichick is notorious for trading guys for draft picks, and then he ends up drafting guys that end up being better. So we'll see if he moves on. I think he could have a decent NFL career. I mean, he's on a wide receiver one. He's a fringe wide receiver 2/3. But I think if he goes to the right team, he could be a good fit. And I was hoping San Francisco would get him, but I was also hoping they would try to trade for Julio Jones if he held out any longer. But, you know, that ended. So I'm interested to see where he goes. I don't think it'll be San Francisco, but I think a team will make a call to New England and Belichick and try to get him.
Yeah, definitely so. You know, it is kind of funny that that's just a growing trend that every time Belichick kind of is ready to pass on somebody or decides to, that Shanahan's usually the one who ends up with him. So, I mean, if he ends up out that way, that'd be great. I'm sure Jimmy Garoppolo is already familiar with him. So, I mean, that'd be a good thing. But, yeah, it's always weird when Belichick suddenly wants to move on from somebody. I think that's why he still holds on to Gronk. He still sees a lot of value there. But as soon as he thinks that Gronk is ready to pass on, we're going to see that one too. Who knows? Maybe he goes out to San Francisco as well. Last real bit of there is the other NFL thing that you actually brought up, Cody. I'll bring that up real quick. That is, we'll get into Julio in a second for everybody who is asking. But you got Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald, who are currently still sitting out waiting on new deals. I heard Cowherd say this the other day. I have to tend to agree. He has them, when he went over this division, he has the Raiders as fourth in their division because he feels like you can't just take 10 years off and then step out of the booth right onto the sideline and just pick up where you left off. Plus, he feels like there's a lot of turmoil. There's something going on in Oakland he can't put his finger on. So, and I tend to agree. The Raiders have some internal issues. They got to get some of these contracts done or, you know, two of their better players may not start the season. What are you hearing over that way, Cody?
Well, the report came out today that, you know, Gruden and Khalil Mack haven't spoken since Gruden got hired in January. It's been, what, 6-7 months now since then, I believe, if my math's right. Somewhere around there, almost 7 months. But it's crazy to think that your best player, I'm sorry, Derek Carr, Khalil Mack is the best player on the Raiders. I think that for them not to talk is very, very alarming. Even if it's, you know, if it's not true, great, you know, it's great. But if it is true, that's really alarming. And I'm thinking that, you know, they hopefully get this done. But Gruden said he doesn't want to pay him, you know, big time money. And, you know, Gruden, he's there for 10 years. He's a 10-year contract, and he's running the show. And you see what the moves that the Raiders have made. That Gruden's got rid of guys he didn't like. And I don't think he does not like Khalil Mack. I think that's a little silly to think that he doesn't like Khalil Mack. He's one of the best defensive players in the league, if not the best, maybe right behind Von Miller. But I think they need to get this deal done because, you know, there's going to be a ton of teams calling the Raiders, you know, offering up draft picks, you know, to get him. I don't know if they'll actually move him in a trade, but it'd be something they should consider if Gruden really doesn't like him. But, man, Cowherd's right. I mean, they could finish fourth in that division because you have a young Kansas City team with Patrick Mahomes taking over. The Chargers are going to be better, and you still have in Denver. Denver's a young team too, but they have a quarterback, and if Case Keenum can stabilize that offense, you know, there, you know, it could be the Raiders finishing fourth, and, you know, it's going to be a bad start for Gruden because, you know, they're moving to Vegas in 2 years. But, you know, if they can't get zoned Khalil Mack, it's going to be very alarming because, like I said, he's their best player, and he's one of the best players overall in the NFL.
Coach, what do you think about Oakland this year?
I agree. I think what people also have to take into consideration is this administration with Reggie McKenzie being the GM. Gruden at one time being in Green Bay as a young coach, so there's a connection. But when it comes to Khalil, I think that he's well deserving of the money. Again, I don't know what's going on internally with the team, but it's kind of alarming, and it is shocking that they have not gotten this deal done. By far, he is the best player on their team right now, and he's not been a trouble guy. So if he knows he's not made a big stink about his relationship with his coach, but it is kind of odd that when a new coach comes in and with the type of contract that Gruden has, that he immediately wouldn't begin to have those conversations more, especially with his veteran players. So it's going to be interesting to see how this whole situation plays itself out, but hopefully they'll get it done pretty quick here and it will no longer be a distraction to the organization.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I feel like even though he's a good friend of yours, Coach, and highly respected on this show, I feel like Reggie McKenzie is slowly on his way out over there. I think Gruden is just going to want total power, and if I'm paying somebody $100 million over 10 years, I'm probably going to tend to want to give them what they want, because if you're going to pay them that much, you're going to hope that it pans out that way. But all these people holding out, I mean, that now moving on to the Julio thing, is as far as he's no longer holding out, but basically the way the Falcons had to deal with that is they did the Le'Veon Bell type deal where they took $2 million from next year, allocated it to this year, and then more than likely they'll just tear up next year's deal or add on to it at that point. But that's going to basically get him to show up. Do you really think, Coach, I'll start with you. Do you really think it was all over $2 million, or do you think this is a respect thing with Julio?
Well, I first of all, I think that there are a lot of things that could have been done. I mean, is Julio deserving of the money? Absolutely. I think the reason why he signed the deal initially as a rookie the way that he did was because I think we tend to forget that, you know, Julio has, you know, he's been hurt a lot. I mean, he's played injured with the foot coming out of college with the surgery. So that was kind of an insurance policy. But one of the things I found very unique about this situation, it could have gone away really soon, had Matt Ryan probably played a role in this. I mean, I think that in my opinion, he got way too much money for such a short-term deal. And, again, you know, to make this go away, he could have easily given some of the money back to help restructure some of the deals that are still out there on the table. Again, you know, it's a slippery slope. You know, Julio still has a couple of years still left on that contract. The $2 million, I think, is just something to go ahead and give him something. But I think, you know, there again, this could have been handled by his quarterback a lot more expeditiously, just by saying, hey, I'm willing to give back $15 million, you know, to the organization. Because, again, you know, Matt's playing probably on his last contract for sure. I think he'll retire as a Falcon in the next 2 years when this contract is up. So at that point, if you're really trying to make a move and you want to kind of solidify what you have and, you know, you want to make sure that the veterans are taken care of, and you see the quarterbacks do it all the time. You see Tom Brady. He does it every year to keep certain players around, and sometimes that has to happen. So again, I think the $2 million is more of a pacifier. I think it's more of an appetizer than it is a full-course meal. And they will have to come up with something, again, at the end of this year for Julio to be satisfied, or I think that he goes right into free agency and beats out the season is over.
And then, Cody, your thoughts on the Julio thing, and then do you think that a similar thing would get Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack to show up out in the Bay Area?
Well, in regards to Julio, I think that this – for my personal opinion is Julio knew signing this deal a few years ago that in a couple of years he was going to be in one of the – you know, he wasn't even the highest-paid wide receiver in the NFL. And I think that that's you know, something – like he's holding the team hostage, and we talked about this at ad nauseum about, you know, how he did this and everything. And I'm glad he got the money because he is, to me, the second-best wide receiver in the NFL. I'm sorry, I think Antonio Brown's the best. Antonio Brown does – for the Steelers is incredible. I think they're if you have to rank them, they might be 1A, 1B. But I'm glad Julio got his money, and you know he knew this going into signing that contract that his deal was going to be different in a couple of years where more guys are getting more money. I mean, look at Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks got all that money with the Rams. I think that kind of ticked him off a little bit. And then you see how much money Matt Ryan got, and that kind of hurt financially. It might have strapped the Falcons with that. But I think this is going to be a little interesting because with in regards to Donald and Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald wants a lot of money, and he deserves it. I said that Khalil Mack's best defensive player. Him, Mack, Donald, and Von Miller might be the three best defensive players in the league, and two of the three aren't happy with their contracts right now. And Donald pretty much said that he's willing to sit out the entire season until he gets a new deal, which I don't think he'll do because that defense is going to be so good under Wade Phillips if he can get on the field. With Ndamukong Suh and what they got with Marcus Peters and LaMarcus Joyner coming back and Akeem Talib, I think that could be great. I think this Julio thing is a good step in the right direction for two teams to work something out. But we saw with the Steelers, they couldn't get Le'Veon Bell signed to a long-term deal, and I think that's going to come back to bite them. So I'm hoping the Rams don't, Les Snead and the Rams don't drag their feet on this because they might lose, arguably one of the top three defensive players in the league if they don't get, make them happy.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I mean, the Falcons had to do something. Arthur didn't want to budge on it, but I think that between Dimitrov and Coach Quinn that they said, we got to do something, at least a sign of good faith, just to say, we appreciate you, Julio. We're not trying to disrespect you in any way. So they moved the money around. That's all it is to most of these guys, especially at this stage of his career. It's just moving numbers around because it's not like he needs the money, but it's kind of a sign of good faith. We'll hit a few quick things real quick, and then we will get out of here because a lot of good things on TV here in a minute, probably more than likely. But CFL notes, and the reason why I was initially just going to bring up that former Georgia State quarterback Nick Arbuckle, he holds pretty much every record at Georgia State in just 2 years. He plays a lot like Andrew Luck. He's a coach's kid. He's like a coach on the field. He's a real good player. But he has actually started to get a few snaps up in Calgary for the Calgary Stampeders. He is the backup currently, but the other guy keeps getting dinged up. But the whole reason why I bring this up, I was not just going to say that because a shout-out to Nick for doing well. But in watching his last game, because there was a chance he was going to start, Calgary played against the Montreal Alouettes. This is relevant because Montreal just didn't look right on offense the whole way. Their quarterback's pretty good, but they have all kinds of issues that's keeping them from really rolling. So what did head coach Mike Sherman of the Montreal Alouettes do? Well, he traded into the Tiger Cats for their backup quarterback, one Johnny Manziel. And Mike Sherman, the former Green Bay Packer great, said, we didn't trade for Johnny for him to sit on the bench. So there's a good chance we're going to see Johnny Manziel on the field in Canada. We'll see how fast he catches on to this game. Cody, we'll start with you. Do you think Johnny Manziel stands a chance, or do you think this is just another flake out?
I think he has a good shot. I mean, he's backing up Vernon Adams, the former Oregon quarterback up there, so I think that could be interesting. I think that this is going to be something to watch because, Johnny's Johnny, and people want to see him get it. Everyone in this country wants everyone to have a second chance and deserves it. And I think Johnny deserves a second chance, but, some people might disagree with me. Coach, you might disagree about Johnny, but I think Johnny deserves a second chance. And I think that if he does well, hopefully he's back in the NFL, because of guys like I brought him up earlier. If Josh Gordon can keep getting chance after chance after chance for things that he's done with drugs, where Johnny was just being young and being dumb and having money. And you know, I think he's trying to turn it around, and I hope that he gets on the field up there in Canada and he plays well in the CFL, because it's a good way to restart building, to rebuild his image, which is something he needs to do. So if he gets this done up there in Canada, he can come back to the NFL. And, you know, he's the guy that was drafted in the first round. He has talent. I know the Browns took him in the first round. They also took Brandon Weeden in the first round. So I don't know how much you can really talk about guys with talent in the first round. But I think being a first-round draft pick, he still has a chance. He's still young. And, you know, hopefully he can figure it out up there in Canada.
Coach, what do you think?
Well, I think, you know, if there's any opportunity, now is his time to audition. And the CFL is giving him an opportunity to do that. So going over to Montreal, he'll be up on the NFL coach. It depends on how well he adjusts to the game, how well he adjusts to the coaching. Will he listen and learn from the mistakes that he's made in the past? We'll see, you know, but here's his opportunity. And so now if he's prepared himself and he's focused himself on really trying to get back into the NFL, now it's, you know, his audition is about to come up pretty soon, and we'll see what he's made of. And, you know, if he has a successful year in CFL, then don't be surprised that you see him back. But again, you know, a lot of that's going to really weigh heavily on how well he plays this year.
Yep, I definitely agree with that. And I wish him the best, especially in the fact that, you know, here in America now, we can pick up a lot of CFL games on some of the ESPN networks, some of the other networks. I think Fox has started to carry a couple maybe. But, you know, there's a chance we get to see Johnny play again. It's the same as Tebow. I feel like deep down he's a good guy. Cody, I think I agree with you that just when you're young and you got money like that, it's real easy to get caught up in the hype, and especially when you have a lot of natural talent. So we'll see how he does there. And Montreal needs a lot of help anyway. So at this point, they got nothing much more they could lose. Manziel could actually do pretty decent based off their scheme. But I want to hit an Atlanta United note before we get out of here. They did pick up the big win 3-1 over DC United, and the now DC United player Wayne Rooney, one of my favorites, he's world renowned. But Joseph Martinez with the hat trick in response to the early goal by DC. It's not just that he scored a hat trick, but this is hat trick, I believe, number 6 in his career, in his year and a half career. He's only been in the MLS for a year and a half. He now completely outright owns the record. Up until he tied the record, Joseph Martinez, when he got his 5th, it was 5 hat tricks in like 55 or 60 total games. He did his in like 44, and then now he breaks the record in like 46 or something like that. It's just watching him play is like watching a video game. I know, Cody, you hadn't got a chance to see him out with the Earthquakes, which if they do play out there, you might want to go, because he's probably going to score 15 goals on them.
Well, seeing that Atlanta has, 32 more points than the Earthquakes do, the Earthquakes are just having an awful season for a team that,
yeah,
you know, was very competitive in the MLS, and they won MLS Cup not that long ago. And, you know, I'm a big
right.
Chris Wondolowski fan, the Earthquakes' best player. He's a great guy. We've had him on the show before. He's a nice dude, and you know, Avaya is a great stadium, and I want to see soccer grow in the United States. As someone that played soccer all the way through high school and, you know, had a few offers to play in college, I like soccer. You know, I don't watch the MLS as much as I should. I watch the World Cup. I don't really watch a lot of, you know, Champions League and stuff like that, although I work with people that do, so that kind of keeps me up on it. But, you know, Atlanta's having a good year, and, you know, I've been following as much as I can to kind of see what's going on. And, you know, I love watching what's going on in with the Galaxy, with the I'm going to completely botch his name, but Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I love what he's doing with the LA Galaxy, and I think that, you know, it's a good story to have him over. So these guys coming over from playing overseas, guys like Wayne Rooney, and I know Verano Terry was playing a couple years ago with was it New York, the Red Bulls, I think he was playing for. You know,
yeah,
when these
so.
Guys come over, it's great, and you know, I want to see young kids, you know, in soccer stay in the U.S. and help grow the MLS, because I think there's potential there, but it's because with everything going on with football, I think it's going to grow. But I know Atlanta's having a great year, and it's good for them, because soccer, you know, to have soccer grow in the South like that is good. And, you know, I think it's good for Atlanta, because we're unfortunately for a city that, you know, you have the Hawks doing so well, but you have the Braves playing well. So it's good for, you know, for Atlanta and good for the MLS to have some diversity. And, you know, you mentioned them playing the Earthquakes. I don't know if I'd pay to go see that. I'd go see the bar at Avaya because it's like the largest bar in North America. And with the way the Earthquakes are playing, I mean, I don't know if it's really going to be worth watching unless you want to see a lot of goals scored by Atlanta and none scored by the Earthquakes.
Yeah, and basically to put this in perspective, right before I throw it to you, Coach, on your thoughts of Joseph Martinez. So far this season, he has played in 22 matches. He has 22 goals and 2 assists. He is averaging a goal a game. And on top of that, he has actually scored 4 more goals than the Seattle Sounders team have collectively. And I think he's only 2 behind one of the other teams, maybe Portland or one of the other teams in the league. Coach, have you ever seen anything else in sports like this? Somebody who is just redoing every offensive record?
No, I can't say that I haven't. Those guys we call phenoms. They're phenomenal athletes. And in that soccer is not indigenous to the South, as you would find in other places, you know, inside of our country. For it to be happening in Atlanta is a great thing right now. And I tell you right now, Atlanta, the Falcons better watch out because right now they're selling out United tickets and you can't hardly find them. So, again, this is great for our city. This is a great time for soccer to be, you know, to be grasping itself, especially in the Deep South. And I'm wishing him, you know, a great career and great success. But just don't be surprised that, you know, the soccer team is going to be really the next big thing. Atlanta better step up because soccer is about to, you know, it's about to start getting some important dates, and they're going to be jockeying for some things down the stretch.
Oh yeah. As soccer progresses and gets bigger and bigger, especially here in the South, it, like you said, it's something the Falcons need to be looking over their shoulder about, because when it comes down to the importance of booking that stadium, there's going to be times Atlanta United's going to win the argument.
Well, I agree with you 100% because right now they're selling out. The soccer venue is being sold out. I mean, you know, there's no about that. There, you'll be standing outside trying to watch it, you know, through the great windows of the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So soccer's really, really catching on here, and it does have a great fan base. So Atlanta, you know, one thing Atlanta has to do this year, they have to really, you know, go out and grasp it, especially with the Super Bowl being played here. You know, a lot of pressure is placed on Atlanta this year to step it up and put themselves in a position to contend, because now they're going to be splitting the fan base if they're not careful.
And Cody, before I throw it to you for the last word here, yeah, I've been to 3 United games. One last year where I sat in the 200 section of the suites. I sat in the supporter section, which is by far the most rabid section. That's right behind the home goal. And I actually got to sit up top in the 300 section. There's not a bad seat in this place. Everywhere you go is positive chaos. It's a great time. If you're looking for something to do, definitely it's a lot easier to get to an Atlanta United game than it is a Falcons game, at least price-wise. But, yeah, you got to hit secondary market because you can't find those tickets. I've been part of the 70,000 a couple times now, and it's crazy to see 70,000-plus people all cheering for the same thing in Atlanta. But, Cody, you get the last word. Go for it.
So I wanted to say, this is you, Coach. You mentioned how the Falcons need to be concerned, you know, because this is happening. I think the same thing's happening in Vegas with the Golden Knights. The Raiders are moving there in a couple of years, and the Golden Knights making it to the Stanley Cup in their first year. I mean, people are crazy about hockey down there, and I think if this continues to grow and hockey continues to grow in Vegas as a hockey fan, I think it's great because, you know, for a team that's like the Raiders, a prestigious franchise like the Raiders moving there, and you're gonna have the most popular team in the town be hockey. It's going to be really interesting to see how that works out. But I was trying to draw that parallel between soccer and hockey where, you know, 2 markets where, you know, things really weren't popular, but you bring them there, and soccer's kind of taking over Atlanta and hockey's taking over Vegas. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that works out for Vegas and how the Falcons do with popular. I mean, the Falcons are still going to be popular, you know, don't get me wrong. Same with the Raiders, but Vegas can make it to another Stanley Cup and, you know, the Atlanta wins the MLS Cup here. I mean, you're going to have a lot of fans fired up about things, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how that, you know, works going forward for both of those NFL franchises.
Yeah, I agree that Vegas could be, especially with what the Golden Knights are doing, that's probably the closest thing in sports to a fresh team just, you know, coming out of nowhere and really building a fan base so quickly. It's between Atlanta United and the Vegas Golden Knights. And it's good to know that you can tap into these markets where it wasn't big to start with and grow it this fast. I don't think that's an unhealthy thing. I think it's great for sports. And, you know, I think it's going to help things like the Raiders moving to Vegas. It's going to help soccer and even hockey and other things growing in places it didn't typically grow. But I think we got into everything. Quick note, I know that Tony Dungy and his wife have written a couple children's books that are going to come out pretty soon. I think it's you can go to, like, it's like teamdungy.com or something like that. And if you actually register for a contest on there, you can have one of the characters in one of the future books be named after your kid. So anybody that wants to go check that out, I think it's teamdungy.com. But I believe we hit everything. You guys think of anything we might have missed?
No, I think we covered it all.
I was going to say shout out to the Oakland A's for another magical ninth inning comeback. I mean, they're the hottest team in baseball right now, so I'll throw that out there as an A's fan. Keep an eye on that team. They're playing really well.
And shout out to the A's for grabbing the Mets closer, as Familia will actually make you guys better. But go ahead, Coach.
And last but not least, I'd like to say congratulations to the Green Bay Packers for starting their 100th season this year.
Oh, wow.
So
their 100th
Yes, their 100th season and their 100 things you should know about the Packers. Go take the trivia test.
Oh, wow. That sounds like a good challenge there. Plus, next week I got some Aaron Rodgers stuff we're going to get into, so that should be a lot of fun. But I guess that's going to do it for us this week. Shout out to everybody who helped make the show great. Appreciate you, Cody, and you, Coach, being on with us. I am Jeremy the Impact York. As soon as Reggie gets back in town, he is somewhere south of here on an island drinking a fruity drink in a hammock. Enjoy that, Reggie, and happy belated birthday. But I'm Jeremy the Impact York for Superman Cody Elias and the Coach Haywood Hill. This has been Sports Club. We will see you guys next week.
Was that not clear without the bam? Yeah, okay. Bam! What?